Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun. It's time for another episode of Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson. Join Tom as he talks to the artists, writers, performers, and personalities that affect that he can talk into you on the show. Here's Tom.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Big Pop Fun, the podcast, with your lovely and talented host, Tom Wilson. Tom's not available today, but I'm Tom. I just always feel ridiculous using the adjective, so forget it. Forget the adjectives. Here we are. Hey, welcome back. If you've been listening to the podcast, and if you're new and you just downloaded this one to try it out, welcome to another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we gallop down snow-covered hills of laughter. Yes, it's laughter, and we're forgetting our troubles for just a moment as we lighten up, Francis, and go on to our lives, new lives, where we listen to this podcast on our earbuds, yes, but mostly we interact with people and we love them and we laugh with them and we stop staring at our screens for just a little bit, you know, and have a better relationship with people than that holding up our index finger to say, wait, I have to tweet something. And then talking to them and say, what did you just say? I don't know what I'm talking about. The podcast is brought to you by The Masked Man, my book. Yeah, you can get it on your iPad from the iTunes Store, the Kindle, or the Nook. My book, The Masked Man, has been shortlisted. I don't know what that means other than just a short list, but it's been shortlisted on ShekiMagazine.com for their Comedy Summer Reading List. ShekiMagazine.com is, hey, do you want to know about the inner workings of stand-up and what's going on in the stand-up comedy world? ShekiMagazine.com is run by Brian McKim and Tracy Skeen, two wonderful comics in their own right who live in Las Vegas, Nevada, and have run this blog for quite a long time. It's some of the best writing on stand-up comedy that's going on the internet, and they've been going for a few years now. So it's quite a website, and I suggest that you check out ShekiMagazine.com, where they have shortlisted my book, The Masked Man. Check it out. I am back from Jackson, Mississippi. I was there with my old comedy friend, Henry Cho, and we were doing we were performing at a benefit to benefit spinal muscular atrophy, which is a dread disease affecting very young people, small children, and into their 20s. We just help them, help with research, of course, help to find a cure, and help young people and struggling families with the expense of the very technologically advanced and intricate electric wheelchairs that these young people often need. I met a young man named Blake who is quite a guy, dancing and vibrant eyes. He gets around in his wheelchair just fine. His movement, he's having great difficulty with his movement and with his about, I don't know, it looked like three fingers that might still move. He runs the entire website of the organization. So quite a powerful and memorable young man. There were many, many, many young people there in their wheelchairs, and of course, an incredible inspiration to me. And I appreciate their friendship very much. And if you have any money, just go and look at Google Stop SMA, spinal muscular atrophy, and give. I know on my podcast, I always say to help artists and sponsor artists, and I don't back off of that at all. In artists who have a product, go and see a show and buy a piece of art and do that, because that enriches your life. But nothing can enrich your life more than helping people who really need your help. I mean, believe me, you know, let's not get into the whole Kickstarter world, because I have arguments about that enough with people here in Southern California with artists. But if there's a choice, my friends, between helping poor people to eat or helping some dude finish his third album that is his pride and joy. Let's help the poor people. What do you say? But I know people are up in arms about that, and that'll start a whole thing. James Arnold Taylor is my guest this week. Now, James has been a guest before, very early in the podcast, back when I didn't know what I was doing, hosting a podcast, and things are so different now. Yeah. Well, James was a guest, and as you know, if you've listened to the podcast, I talk to people about their families because I'm interested in that. What did Dad do? What did Mom do? What kind of a foundation do you have for the kind of life, especially a life in the arts, that you've led? Well, I asked James about Dad, and James said, well, he was in a kind of a interesting position because 2 weeks previous, he had found out that the dad that he knew his entire life, he found out that that was not his actual dad. And of course, that was a huge piece of news that one, I guess, must process. And he's been processing it and working through it for the past, well, certainly over a year since the time he was on my podcast. I hadn't seen him for a while because he lives up in Santa Barbara, a lovely city up the coast here. But I had seen him at Star Wars weekends at Disney in Orlando. And I mentioned that on the podcast that my association with Star Wars is very sketchy. But hey, I was in Orlando and he said, hey, you were in Star Wars Detours, an animated show that will never probably see the air. And I'm a part of a Star Wars game. Star Wars video game called the Old Republic. So I went over there and he had me on stage and we did some improvisation and we had a lot of fun with the Star Wars fans there. So I saw him at Star Wars weekends and reiterated my wish that we get together and have a lunch at his house and maybe do another podcast to see how he's doing. So he was back from Comic-Con, which was he does, I don't know, he's doing these Comic-Cons and everything. He's very popular because he's the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi in Clone Wars, and he's the host of Star Wars Weekends and Star Wars. He's a big, I don't know, he's ensconced in the world of Star Wars, which I am not, but that's okay. I've never been to Comic-Con. I've never been invited to Comic-Con, in fact, but that's okay. I'm cool with that. No, I'm okay. I have nothing against it. I mention one con experience in the book, The Masked Man, shortlisted on ShakyMagazine.com summer reading list. But I mentioned that, but I have not been to one of those huge ones because I don't really. When I go to those things, and when I'm out, I meet a lot of guys, folks, who don't make eye contact and who hand me a stack of 50 photographs of myself from Back to the Future and want me to sign everyone. And then if I sign 24 of them and there's a cab waiting, whatever, if I sign 24, say, they're having me on TV, right? I've got to go. And then they go on to, message boards and say what a jerk I am. So I really don't. I try not to diss that world too much because I understand that most that's a vast minority of people that I've met so many wonderful, wonderful people from that world. But in ways, I'm a babe in the woods. I don't understand the Comic-Con experience because I haven't been there. But James is a Comic-Con guy and he has so many friends there and he's very busy at Comic-Con doing Star Wars things and Johnny Test things or whatever. So I wanted to talk to him again. Another overlong introduction to introduce my conversation with my friend, James Arnold Taylor.
It's Big Pop Fun.
You were on the podcast when it was that over a year ago, I suppose, huh?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, well, yeah, actually it was. It was well over a year ago.
And not to bring in any family dynamics or any of that stuff, but you had shared at that point, which was a surprise to me, that, you know, I asked, hey, so what did your dad do or what did your mom, or whatever those kind of family questions that I like to ask.
Yeah.
Where are people from and everything?
Right.
And you said, well, it's sort of a surprise to me, but 2 weeks ago I found out that my dad wasn't my actual father. And this kind of a very gigantic boulder had been dropped into the pond of James's life.
Yeah.
And I wonder, have the ripples decreased? How are you?
Well, thank you. I'm fine. It's good to be back on. But yeah, what had happened was I found out through a DNA test that the man I thought was my father my whole life was not. And so through the last year and a change, trying to kind of figure it all out, work it all out, come to some conclusions, but also just trying to go forward. The people that, you know, I have siblings that he had and stuff because he was married. They were both married. Both parties were married to other people.
Oh, okay.
This was an affair, a one-time affair, and, you know, and I want to be respectful.
Of course. Of course. And you don't have to go into any of this. I'm just wondering, how are you doing with it? Because, it was sort of, it was 2 weeks before we spoke.
Yeah.
So we were sort of like, well, I've just experienced a very large shock.
And here's the thing about it. I say I want to be respectful, and I do. But the other thing about it that I find, and in discussing it with my family, with my mother, is it is my life. It's about my life. It's about my actual very existence. And I don't mean that to sound heavy on. But to find out that you're not who you thought you were or where you're connected in that way is a very just surreal. It's a weird thing. And the thing I keep trying to explain to my mom, because I understand with her, there is this feeling of shame or, embarrassment by it. This day, and look, that was 44 years ago, 45 years. I'm 44, so it was 45 years ago because of, you didn't speak of those things. Nowadays, it's like, hey, who hasn't done that? Hey, come on,
Exactly, yeah.
And I say that not in jest, but in that society accepts things a lot differently now. So I keep trying to say, look, there is no judgment on any of that. And my siblings, nobody is judging anybody. But the thing is this is good news. it's good because now I know who I am. I know why I am nothing like my siblings. I know why I don't really fit in. I don't, height-wise, look-wise, all those things. All the piece of the puzzle makes sense. It's like finding out you were adopted. And you go, so I've never been one to try and kind of focus on the negative of it, but the positive of it. But to be positive about it, you have to be honest about it. So that's where I've been with it. It's like I just have to be honest about it. Sorry you don't like that I'm going to talk about it, and I may not talk about it, or that I'm going to be talking about it publicly, but I'm in a public forum. And I believe this. There are a lot of people nowadays that are dealing with fatherlessness, growing up without a father. And I could sit there and say, I'm doing Tom Wilson's podcast, and we're talking about, I had some issues, Tom. We all have had family issues and find these. That doesn't help a kid that is struggling right now, going, I never knew my father. I don't know who I am. I'm kind of screwed up right now. But to have a person that they look at as a form of a celebrity or whatever, as a voice actor, I'm a voice actor, go, yeah, this happened to me. This is very real. And I'm dealing with it, and I'm being honest about it, I hope helps people. Does that make sense?
Of course, it makes sense. Yeah. Of course it makes sense. Well, isn't that the best way to deal with any tragedy, anything that's happened in your life? If it doesn't increase your capacity for compassion toward other people who have certainly suffered the same things that you have, then...
And it's what's funny you say that? It is amazing. By the honesty of it and being out there about it, I have literally been on projects where I'm working with people that I've known for a couple years. And this comes up and they go, I had the exact same thing happen. I mean, like to a T, three different people that I've known. And it's like, yeah. I found out when I was 29, my father wasn't my father and all this, and I went on a search and I found him, or another one. Yeah, I had to, and it's amazing how this happens and how when the world was kind of in that place of shutting their eyes to some of these things, which I don't know, me particularly, I liked the old days, but I liked when we were a little more quiet about our things, I guess, on one degree. But on the other, the honesty of being able to help people, it is amazing what's come out of it, because I've been able to now find other people that have had the exact same thing as me and be able to sit down and talk about it, which is very healing.
So would you say, I guess, well, you know, my dad was very important in my life and everything, but would you say that that identification with your father is more important than you had previously thought?
Yeah. Because, okay, let me see if I can voice this right. Because I had so little in common with who I thought was my father, I didn't put as much emphasis on it because I thought, well, I'm just kind of screwed up.
You put it on yourself.
Well, yeah.
As there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Because you're not sort of modeling after your dad. There's just some, not there. You don't have a harmonic convergence with dad. It's just not humming along right. There's something wrong.
Right. Yeah.
And you thought it was you.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think in general, most of us,
human,
especially,
huh?
Yeah, especially actors, tend to be those kind of like self-effacing, but also, look at me, aren't I wonderful?
But isn't that look at me, aren't I wonderful thing just that, you know, like the smokescreen?
Yeah.
Look at me, aren't I wonderful? Because but pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
That's right. Yeah. And the pain and the, yeah. So dealing with that, finding out, because again, the truth I found out, for those of you that may not remember, let's go back. I found out that my real father was a radio guy and a TV host and did advertising stuff and wrote copy and things. All the things that I did as a young man from 16 on getting into showbiz. I got into radio. I wrote copy. I produced commercials at the radio stations. I loved radio. I had this love for radio that I never understood why. My mom was in radio before, and so I just figured it was that. But this guy, this was his life, was in radio and voice and entertainment. And so I go, well, now it makes sense. So that's why I've been trying to kind of explain to my mother and family and such that it's okay. It's all okay. I'm just grateful to know the truth now. And that's very difficult when people have swept the truth under for so long and don't want to look at it. So, you know, in that, it's I have nothing but love and compassion and understanding for what happened. And that's why my talking about it is important, because I think other people need to see that too. Don't, you know, it's like, you know, we're both parents. You become a parent and you go, oh gosh, yeah, it's, I get it. But I really get it. I don't hold anything against him. I just want to know the truth about it.
And without any disrespect to your siblings that you've known your whole life, but after this information came to light, do you find that they're just way dumber than you are?
Yeah, no. How do I?
And with all due respect, I mean, I respect family dynamic and everything, and I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable. But did you find out, like, oh, that's why I'm way smarter and better looking than everyone?
No, actually, you know, my brother was like in school, was the just football surfer, good look at, like, the chicks dug my brother, and like a foot taller than me. And my sister is one of the most beautiful women you'll ever meet, and lovely. And she's like 5'10", just model looking. And her daughter models now. And so, I mean, there's a beautiful family. My mother was a model, and she was Miss San Jose, and just gorgeous. So good genes there.
Oh, so it ends up, you're the ugly weird dude. Okay, whatever way it happens.
I got the and no disrespect to my father's side of the family, but it doesn't really matter because they don't know I exist anyways, right? No. He was short. So it was like I finally get to see why I'm 5'4". I've always been the shortest kid. Every year I was the shortest kid in my class. I say that I do a stage show that I do, and I talk about that, being the shortest kid, and that's why I did voices to entertain people, and I thought, okay. No, he was like the shortest guy too. I went back. So here's some of the stuff I've done over the last year and change. I found out where he went to school, college. And I searched their yearbooks because all these colleges, they have archives. Now, thanks to the internet and digital, they have scanned yearbooks. So because he was considerably older than my mother. So I found his yearbooks from like the 40s and found his college and pictures of him. And it's amazing to finally look at a picture of somebody and go, oh, that's where I get my eyes, or that's where I get my nose, my ear, my chin, you know, my mouth or my crooked teeth. Everybody else in my family never needed braces. I was like, you know, and we couldn't afford them. God bless my mom. She couldn't afford them growing up. So now I've had like the invisible line ones that I've worn for the last, you know, 10 years of my life to straighten my teeth, because I had really crooked teeth. Got them from Pop, you know. So now I know where. So again, that's the good stuff of it all. It's seeing where you come from, seeing who you are, why you are. And that's why also in my show and on my daily social media, I'm telling people, be who you are and be positive and be happy about it, because...
You are an incredibly positive person. You really are.
Oh.
And I think, because if people don't know, on your Twitter, your Facebook feeds and everything, you do say, I mean, it's not life coaching drivel, but you do... always have something positive to say about something. Is that some gift that you have had throughout your life, or is that something that you decided to concentrate on?
Mm, yeah.
Because you were different than that, and you thought, I have to change the way I am and start being more positive.
I think more so the latter. Not to say, see, it's very difficult to do a thing where you're going, I'm going to be honest 100%, and I don't want to hurt anybody, because I know that if my mother were to listen to this, and I think she listened to our last one, and she was hurt by things I said.
I'm sorry about that.
No.
For mentioning it.
And, that's not nothing to do with you. That's to do with me.
Yeah.
Has to do with me being honest about it. But again, I find the positive in it, because I grew up in a time and a place that was very negative and very hurtful and very dark. There was a lot of darkness, and there was a lot of stuff that I saw that I never should have seen at very young ages. And so it's been a conscious effort on my part in my adult life to say, now I'm going to look at the good and what even a negative circumstance can bring positively. And so I make a concerted effort to do that every day. I read a book years ago. Kari Wahlgren. Have you ever had Kari on your show?
I have not.
Kari Wahlgren. You should get Kari on your show sometime. She is a fantastic voice actress and has done all sorts of... She's great. She's everywhere now. A lot of superhero ones and a lot of animation work. And she's easy on the eyes, as they say. And she's lovely. And she recommended I read a book at one point. Called The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale.
Well, sure, yeah. Huh?
Everybody knows that. It has millions and millions of copies. And I thought, oh, yeah, I've heard that book. And I sat down and read it, and it actually did change my life. And it changed my thinking and my perspective. And it's amazing what that can do. Just waking up and going, no, I'm going to actually look to the positive stuff of it. And so it is a concerted effort on my part, because I think I have a general ability to go to the negative, if not. So... that's why I do it. I do it as much for myself as I do it for everybody else.
Is it a continual struggle for you, or do you think when you do the positive things that you do, does it actually work and get easier?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. It gets easier because you start to retrain the brain and the structure of your thinking to go, oh, no, I'm going to actually, you know, when something bad happens, I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm going to go to a good, and it happens, because I would find that I could dwell on things. I tend to be somebody, I'm a fixer. I want to fix things. I want to make things right. I want to help other people. I want their lives to be good. That was kind of my dynamic growing up. I was the hero of the family, you know, do a show, make everybody laugh, take their minds off of the bad things. Don't look at that. Let's look at this. So I guess it's always been in me to go to the fun or the, but now to believe it is the part that I'm working on to go, okay. And I do believe it. I, you know, having a very active, charming 8-year-old daughter who, you know my daughter very well, and she is just like, hey, you know, and she's adopted. She is adopted from China. My wife and I adopted her from China because the two of us cannot have kids. And that, seeing that little life and seeing her being positive all the time, and I thought, yeah, she doesn't need to hear resume all the time and take that on, because you see how quickly a kid does it.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, ooh, I don't want that. So, yeah, that's a very long answer.
It's a good answer, though. I mean, is it an honest answer?
It's an honest.
Then it's a good answer. Then it's a good answer.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't need to plumb your the depths of your psyche.
Oh, sure, go
for
ahead.
The entire. No, it's okay. James, I admire you greatly,
as I'm sure
you know, as I try to express to you, because you do take these the circumstances of your life and always turn them into great positive things.
Oh, thanks.
In your own life, but in other people's lives, in serving and loving and being kind to others, which is what it's all about.
Yeah.
But you, I wanted to check. Now we're done with you. We're done with you and your psyche.
Yes.
Forget it.
Yeah.
I wanted to call you and see you anyway, so yeah, we've come up to the undisclosed location. But but you're just back from Comic-Con.
Yeah, just got back from Comic-Con.
Because you and I... As I said on the podcast, for those podcast listeners, that I was in Orlando,
yep,
and I was performing, and you were there at Disney World, the Magic Kingdom.
I was at the Hollywood Studios.
Hollywood Studios.
There's, what, four different places. You got Animal Kingdom, Magic Kingdom, Hollywood Studios, and Epcot. So I was at the Hollywood Studios for a month doing Star Wars weekends, where I host that big event.
So we weren't in Disney World where I was?
Well, no, you were part of Disney World, but it's Disney World's Hollywood Studios.
Yes. I didn't know where I was. I was behind the scenes somewhere.
A car came, picked me up.
They throw me through through a door, and then just there are people
cart.
With hats, people with Mickey Mouse hats. Yeah.
Hello,
and then
Tom.
I'm riding on a golf cart. But you were doing Star Wars weekends.
Yes.
And you were the host.
This is the third year I got to host. Star Wars weekends is a big event celebrating all things Star Wars. And I also hosted, since the last time we spoke, Star Wars Celebration. So I've been very fortunate.
In Florida as well?
That was also in Florida. And that was for like 40,000 people come out for this. It's the biggest Star Wars convention that happens in the world. And they do it a couple of times. They'll do it here, and they won't do it for another couple of years.
So. But then when they have this celebration, 40,000 people come.
Yeah. And then... they have different stages, and there's the main stage. And the main stage is a 3,000-seat theater. And this time it was at the Orlando Convention Center. And I hosted the main stage. So all the big names, the biggest names in Star Wars would come to my stage, and I would sit down with them and interview them. And so, you know, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Ian McDiarmid, who played the Emperor, who's a charming British fellow. You have... all the guys that play Boba Fett, and we had the Clone Wars cast.
There are several Boba Fetts?
Well, you have different Boba Fetts.
I thought it was Jeremy Bullock.
Well, Jeremy Bullock was the original Boba Fett, but then you have
The original. Just so we know, Jeremy Bullock,
the original
Boba Fett.
Boba Fett. But then when they made the prequels, Boba Fett was a kid. So Daniel Logan, who is a charming, strapping young man, who was actually a very young boy, what, maybe 10 or 11 years old.
Does he still have a helmet? They still have a little tiny helmet?
I don't know. He might. Yeah, I'm sure he has one. I'm sure they can.
Oh, but does I didn't see those last ones.
No. He was a kid. He was, and you learned the origin of Boba Fett in the prequels.
Oh, okay.
And so he played him there. So you have those two different ones. Then we had, I love this name. Ready? Hold yourself. Dickie Beer. He's a stuntman.
Oh, he's got to be a stuntman. You're either a stuntman or NASCAR driver.
Yeah.
You're coming around the third turn, Dickie Beer.
Dickie Beer was the stuntman that did all the stunts in Return of the Jedi, where Boba Fett got thrown into the Sarlacc pit.
Oh, okay.
So I had all three of them on the stage together. We interviewed them. You know, I interviewed them and had a lot of fun with them. Warwick Davis, very talented.
Warwick, whom I met when I was there.
He would be great. You do a podcast with him.
I would love all of your podcast suggestions, James. Maybe you could make something of an Excel spreadsheet with all the different people and the contact information.
Okay, very good.
No, but Warwick was very nice. We met when I was there.
He's a great actor and guy and just charming and funny. And
how did you get the gig to be the host of both Star Wars Celebration, 40,000 people at a gigantic convention center in Orlando, and Star Wars Weekends for Disney?
Yeah.
Which I said on the podcast that I can make fun of you for the rest of your life because you were in the parade on the back of a Camaro waving at people, and I saw that, and then you get on stage and have a whole song. I don't know the song, but it was, you know, it was the kind of this, and Boba Fett is here. It was very show busy, you know, and here comes the when Star Wars Weekends at Disney, and then, but just that it ends with a pose of you going, behind the fuss, and then boom, all these fireworks go off behind you, and I just was, you know, I said, thank God for such a gift that I can see my friend James, you know, with his showbiz Liza Minnelli pose, behind the fuss, and boom,
that you remember
fireworks.
That you actually remember it. That's great. You can see it online.
Oh, it's online, the whole song.
Oh yeah, yeah. See, here's my thing on it. Because I've been kind of this, I've been lucky enough to host a lot of different things, and they asked me to come and host. I don't know why, but I thought I'll do like a Billy Crystal thing. You got to make fun and have fun. So I thought I'll go over the top. So I took Star Wars songs and I put lyrics to them to tell people about the shows that were going on at the event. And I
don't get me wrong, I love it.
I went very tongue in cheek and all that, but I love that. I love your description of it.
Does it end like that, or am I wrong?
No, it does. It does. It absolutely ends like that. It was a Michael Bublé kind of
exactly.
Hey, you know, It was. I had fun doing it.
But how? So, but how did you get the gig? I mean, what does Disney come to you? Because I know that you've done voices on Clone Wars.
I'm the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi. I've been the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi for Lucasfilm for the last 11 plus years. So anytime Obi-Wan says anything and they need him, and it's not, you know, Alec Guinness or Ewan McGregor anymore, because, you know, Alec Guinness no longer with us. Ewan McGregor, kind of a busy big actor.
So do you a sound alike to one of them, or is Obi-Wan in Clone Wars his sort of his own character?
Yes to all of that. It started matching Ewan McGregor's voice, because as a voice actor, you know that I double celebrities a lot. I'm Johnny Depp's voice double, or Ewan McGregor's, or Michael J. Fox, or David Spade, or whoever. So I will double them when they're not available. That's how it started, doubling Ewan McGregor while they were still making the prequels. Then they came up with Clone Wars, and at that point, that's when George Lucas and Dave Filoni, our supervising director, said, look, these guys will never play Obi-Wan Kenobi again. This is your role. You're Obi-Wan. Make your Obi-Wan. So I did my best to combine. So you've got, you know, Ewan McGregor is, he's got, you must be mindful of the Force. He's up here and it's all this, and it's, you know. And then you have, you know, Alec Guinness, Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's a name I've not heard in a long time. And he's got this kind of little more nasal and kind of Ringo. There's got a little Ringo in it, you know, or, I do my best to kind of combine the two of them now, pay homage to both for the Clone Wars. The Clone Wars was a very successful show. It was on for five seasons. We recorded six seasons. And Disney bought Lucasfilm, which I'm sure everybody knows now. So Disney owns the Star Wars, you know, stuff. And they made a choice, as happens when these conglomerates merge, to get rid of that or to change it. You know, they retired Clone Wars. So
in its present state, whatever that is.
So Clone Wars is no longer. People keep asking, will there be more? Will there be more? There are, because we recorded a whole other season and they animated a good portion of it and there was a lot done to it, they have stuff. So they're calling it bonus content that will be released over the course of the next, you know, however many years, I don't know, you know. And little bits and pieces come out. But so that's for the fans. If there are fans listening, you know, oh, James Arnold Taylor's going to come on Tom's podcast. Oh, I want to hear about Star Wars and I talk about my father for an hour. No.
Hey, that's my fault because I'm interested in your life.
No, I know. So that is what that is. But so I was the voice of Obi-Wan and had been. And they do Star Wars Weekend. So they invited me one year to come out there. And it was one of those deals where it was like, you know, because it's Lucas and it's Disney, so they really don't have any money. So it was one of those phone calls that you get of, hey, would James be interested in going to Disney World and speaking at this thing, Star Wars Weekends, and being one of the guests for the weekend and all that? And we'll put him up in the Disney hotel. And would he be interested in doing that? Sure. And you know, my wife, who is my manager, says, so what does this pay? And they say, well, would he be interested
yes,
in?
Yes, goodwill. Goodwill. It pays
So it was
goodwill.
One of those things where I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. Because I first off, I want to show them who I am and what I can do, because I've been working on this stage show that I had, and I thought I can do bits and pieces of the stage show and I can drum up some interest. And what turned out happening is they saw what I did, and more than just getting up there and talking like Obi-Wan Kenobi, and they went, hey, this guy's pretty funny. So Jason Sorrell, who is now a very dear friend and just a great guy, had said to Mark Renfro, who's kind of the director in charge of it all, you know, that guy would make there's your next host. This guy's great, you know. And Mark went, yeah, that's pretty good. And Mark approached me and said, you know, would you ever be interested in hosting this thing? And he really had a vision for it. And the rest is history. So they asked me, Disney asked me, and I said yes. And they said, it means coming and staying here for a month. And so I went and you move your life. And as a voice actor, you can kind of do that, because as long as you have what we're talking into right now, you've got this great little recording device and a microphone set up, you can pretty much go on the road and take it there. So, yeah. So move the family to Disney for a month, you know, not a bad gig. So every year for the last 3 years, I've been fortunate enough to do that. Disney has been very, very gracious to us. Now, they do pay me now.
Good to know.
No, it's not. But no, that was, you know. And I say that, again, look at the positive of it. Yes, I'll go this one time as a freebie. They put me up and they flew me there. They paid for my food. It wasn't like they did, but they didn't offer, they didn't pay me anything
right.
to do it. I said, yes, I'll do it to show them that I'm worth this.
And they will do that a lot, I think, for 1 week.
Yeah.
Because they're, well, what we will pay you is, we'll fly your family here and put you up, and they can go on all the rides. They can do whatever they want, and you work for us a little bit, and that's kind of the payment is you can run Disney World as long as you want.
Pretty great payment, you know, if you're a family and all of that, especially with a young kid. So, yeah, good deal. And now it's an even better deal, and we go there and we hang out. And my daughter has absolutely no concept of what it means to go to Disney as a normal child.
Of standing in a line and doing that sort of thing.
Because they give you like and it's a charmed life now, see, because they have
you the person with a bow tie.
Yeah.
And everything.
Yeah, you met Brandon. Brandon Tinsley is my DSA, as they call it.
I had one once many years ago when they were opening Universal Studios Florida.
Right.
And they flew me down there with the whole family and everything, and the family went off. Yeah, the family went.
Okay,
yeah,
family
went. We took them to Disney World, and we got the person in the vest and the bow tie to go everywhere.
Yeah,
and
it's fun, but it does. You see, this is where you have to. We want the best for our children, but yeah, and you want to give them everything, but you also need to. There's that balance of teaching them. Okay, but don't become an elitist.
Right.
You know? It's like here you have, because now. We're going to Disneyland in a couple weeks with some old high school friends.
Oh.
And I made a call and said, hey, you know, can you guys help me out and stuff? But like Lydia, my daughter, is going to probably have to stand in lines.
Right. Fortunately for me, we were thrown out of the elitist category so fast that the kids don't even remember it, really.
Yeah.
It was just, okay, back to the lines with regular people, Wilson. Yeah. Like, wow, remember that thing? No, I don't, Dad. We were too young back when we were elitists for about 32 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. The entitlement thing. You know, it's like, don't feel entitled. This is good. It's, you know, so it's interesting. It's interesting. But she's great about it. She gets it, and she's good with standing in line. Again, this little girl sees sunshine in everything. So
at this point, being a Star Wars insider as you are, what is happening with the Star Wars thing?
I know everything, and I'm going to divulge it just here. How about that? That'd be good. And then people will come and listen. We'll
say, finally.
Yeah.
I'll get some Star Wars celebration listeners to the podcast. Now, I was a part of Star Wars. You actually brought me onto the stage. That's what happens. I was in Florida.
You killed. Yeah. You were fantastic.
But you must admit, I've had a very, very sketchy association with Star Wars.
But you've been associated with Star Wars.
I have been associated with Star Wars.
Detours?
Yes, Star Wars Detours, yeah. Which was a long, many episodes animated series.
Two seasons.
Which may very well never see the light of day.
Yep.
And
and then The Old Republic.
The Old Republic, which is a video game.
Video game, yeah.
Kind of world.
Huge. That's a big deal.
That I'm a small part of. I play, a couple little.
Do you remember any of the voices
I don't.
You did?
Gelathron something.
The great thing about Star Wars, when you're doing Star Wars, is when you do an accent, it does not have to be perfect. Because they go, well, it's not, you're not, there's, you're not living in Britain. There is right. no, you know, in the world of Star Wars, it's a different planet. And on this planet, everybody might talk like this.
Right.
But if you don't get it completely right and you go in and out of it and you're doing a character, that's okay because it's Star Wars, you know?
You mean come in and out of it with the same performance?
Yeah, as long as you're performing right. But I mean, there's no, like, because I remember on the show, Dave Filoni, our director, he would go like, I'm thinking this guy might have kind of a French thing happening. But he wouldn't say, so just do a French accent specifically. It can swim around in the world of French, you know?
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of the fun part of those characters and that world is you get to just have fun with it and go over the top with it, which is great.
Or you could have the dialect come in and out within the same character and people compare it to a Kevin Costner movie.
Yeah.
Where sometimes they got a dialect and sometimes they just don't. And they go, wow, it reminds me of so many.
Well, look at Carrie Fisher, and she's the first to admit it in Star Wars A New Hope when she's talking to Tarkin.
What's Star Wars The New Hope?
Star Wars Episode 4, the original Star Wars.
The first one,
the
which
one
was known to me
Star
as Star Wars.
Star Wars. That's right. Because now as the host of all this, I have to know all of this stuff. The language and know all of it. So you had Episode 1. Phantom Menace. Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. Episode 4, A New Hope. Luke Skywalker's first movie. Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, which was originally titled Revenge of the Jedi,
which kids thought was much cooler back then.
But
we thought Return, how lame. We liked Revenge.
But do you know why?
No.
Because Jedis do not seek revenge.
I knew that. I thought that would, yes, but that makes a better movie, though.
Yeah, but, well, they had Revenge of the Sith, because Sith would seek revenge. So, see, there you go. And so that is, and then Clone Wars happens in between 2 and 3. But it went on for like 5 years. It was like a 5-year battle. So we were pretty good. We actually, we ended the show after 5 seasons. So actually, we're right on target.
Well, no, I was in the movie theater.
Yeah,
those many years ago, watching Star Wars as the whole now historic crawl that was going through space came up, and everyone thinking Episode 4.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was back east, so maybe a lot of people thought Episode IV. What is that? What is this, a medical show? What is this, Episode IV?
And IV is where I grew up. Play a little in Santa Barbara, which it's no big deal. We can say that's where we're at right now. We're in Santa Barbara.
I thought it was an undisclosed location.
Well, it's an undisclosed location in Santa Barbara. But, I grew up in Santa Barbara, and I live here in Santa Barbara again, but I grew up in Isla Vista. IV, that's what you called it. So when you say Episode IV, I'm thinking that was my life.
Thanks for sharing, James.
I know. That was a tangent. I'm sorry. You can edit that out. Well, but there's a lot of people that go to UCSB. UCSB is a very popular school.
University of California, Santa Barbara. The Gauchos.
And if you go there, that's where you live, is Isla Vista, IV.
Oh, okay.
It is notorious. Don't you? You know this, right? IV is notorious at Halloween time for these insane parties and things where they have to bring out police and National Guard.
Oh, you mean bad parties that go.
It can go a little bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Not so kids stealing candy corn. It's kind of like it goes a little.
And this is what I grew up in. So I was a little kid growing up in that. So I had to literally leave on Halloween. I had to go to a different neighborhood, a completely different city, to trick-or-treat because it was so bad.
Really?
Yeah, you couldn't just...
I just remember trick-or-treating where you'd be really jealous of kids who lived in apartments.
Now, why is
like
that?
Because you could do so many so fast. You could do an entire building.
I didn't think of that.
You could fill up your bag with Reese's Cups.
Yeah.
And you're done.
We
20
would go,
minutes.
We would go to the nicer neighborhoods, especially in Santa Barbara, because then, you know, like the kids give, like, the, or the families give bigger candy bars.
I don't know what's happening in L.A., but the last two Halloweens,
yeah,
we probably had a total of three trick-or-treaters.
Really?
The last two entire Halloweens.
Wow.
Halloweens.
Well, see, I'm in such an undisclosed neighborhood or location.
Yeah.
And you know, because you know, nobody comes.
You can't find your way here.
Yeah, you can't, actually. So, which I like, that nobody comes to the door.
It's pretty cool.
It is.
Santa Barbara has so many little nooks and crannies.
It does.
They have an entire college, Westmont College.
Yeah, Westmont College is
a wonderful. And you come through these. How do you get to Westmont College? I've never heard of it. And we're,
have you been up there?
I've been up there. Okay. I've been up there a few number of times now because they have a wonderful baseball field and a complex there. And so we've gone up to watch baseball.
Yeah.
But you're coming through these winding roads of houses in a neighborhood in Santa Barbara where, as you know, my goodness,
let's be fair.
Is that Gene Hackman's estate or something?
And it is where Gene Hackman.
I mean, I know Gene Hackman lives up here.
Oprah Winfrey, Steve Martin, Jonathan Winters lived up
here. Yeah, people will drive through Beverly Hills and think that's where the people live. No, drive through the kind of the woods of Santa Barbara and you'll suddenly go, oh, my God. Gosh,
it's
look
amazing.
At these places.
Yeah, and that's like growing up, when I first learned to drive, I had a 66 Mustang, my first car, and drove that around, and I would cut class and drive through that's Montecito, which is a part of Santa Barbara, and it is gorgeous up there. And I would just...
I was not expecting to find an entire college campus.
Oh, yeah, and it's beautiful, it's lovely. We could do, that's what we should do. We should have had microphones strapped to our heads, and I could just be driving you through Santa Barbara.
Giving you a tour. Well, next podcast, some other podcast that you're on.
Yeah.
Or when you go on Rob Paulson's podcast, Talking Tunes podcast.
Talking Tunes. I'll be doing
Talking Tunes. I know you're doing Talking Tunes. Everyone's doing Talking Tunes now.
Now, and is he on Nerdist as well?
No.
Okay. No. Oh, we'll see.
He's not good
enough.
There
you go. Yeah. There you go.
He's not good enough.
That's
Keep
right.
dreaming, Paulson.
There you go. Because I always say, you know, because I started as a stand-up at 16, and I love stand-up comedy, but I always joke, and see, you fit into this same joke. I never had enough neuroses to be a comic. You actually don't have enough neuroses,
didn't
but you
either,
are hysterical.
But I didn't want to be as good a comedian as you wanted to be.
That's
so fortunately, my standards were far lower, and I said... it's acceptable.
Now, can I say this? Let me say this. We, when you were at Star Wars Weekends and you came on and you were a surprise guest and people loved that and it was fantastic, one of the things I then did was I went and saw your show and I brought a group of friends and we all went and saw you. You killed me. You were so funny and great and because we're friends and I we work together, but when we work together, we work in voice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're both kind of sitting in chairs with a music stand and a microphone 6 inches from
and you're doing most of the work, and I'm waiting for page 27 when a truck driver goes, let's get back in the car. And then, thanks, Tom. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, but guess what? You get paid the same as me.
I get paid. Well, we get paid the same, yeah.
Yeah, we get paid the same. But it was so great. I loved your show.
Well, you brought a lot of friends from Disney and from the Star Wars Weekends and everything, and we had a great time. And thank you very much for coming.
And here's now, if I may, here's the other
all right,
thing.
Not too much. I don't want to go Sammy Maudlin on everybody.
Here's the thing that I love about it, because if people are listening and people listen to you, and they listen to your people to learn about showbiz and all that, you do that entire act, and what do? Like 80 minutes?
Not 80. An hour.
An hour.
An hour.
Okay.
A little over
it
sometimes.
Felt like 80. You did, I mean...
Let's say 80 minutes.
Let's say you did 80 minutes. It was fantastic. And not a single curse word. Not a single curse word, this kid, this young man.
Because the kids today...
Comes out.
There's no... To me, it's not an issue.
Yeah, it's just...
Because I've never, ever... advertised myself or promoted myself as a clean comedian.
Right.
I'm just a comedian.
Yeah.
I worked with everybody.
Yeah.
I worked with Andrew Dice Clay. I lived with him. I mean, nothing that people can say on a stage will now make me go like, ooh, ooh, my ears. My ears are, I can't, I've got to leave the room. It's just upset. Oh, I'm getting, somebody get Tom smelling salts. He's heard words in a certain, oh. No. So I don't. I've heard everything that, I've heard every way that words can possibly be paired together. I've heard it
yes.
screamed into a microphone.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just do what I do. I just do what I do. And it's allowed to be on stage because for the moment, it's still America.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm allowed to do what I do. They're allowed to do what they do. Yeah. And it's just go out and do it, man.
But it's a breath of fresh air because it's just funny. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld, I think that was also one of the brilliances of him. He's just funny, you know, just so kids listening that want to be comics, just be funny. Don't rely. That's what I say. That's my little. That's the more you know. That's my.
Boom, ba, boom, ba. James shares a yeah. little bit more from Comedy Corner.
That. I just did. Yeah. If I could just toot your horn for you. I thought that was fantastic.
I think that there is a thing inside of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone.
Yeah.
That. That understands really good humor, and there are some jokes that are blue,
yeah.
that are well crafted jokes that are funny,
yeah.
But when just the shock value has replaced the funny,
yeah.
which all too often I think it happens,
yeah.
the audience is not reacting to good humor; they're reacting to shock. So the sound that you hear is not really laughter.
No.
It's sort of a shocked embarrassment.
Yes.
Which
that's so, yeah, that is exactly what it is.
Which I think leads to everyone driving home, and I'm not sure that they're feeling like they had a great time. Or I think a lot of them are thinking, I don't know what that was. It was an experience of some kind.
Boy, that guy was something, wasn't
it,
he?
Yeah, it was dramatic,
yeah.
and there was, and we were vocal, and it yeah. was sort of a shocked kind of communal humiliation in a way. I don't know what that was. It yeah. was a thing.
And well, you know, there was a time we both did stand up in the 80s where it was. I mean, obviously Lenny Bruce, all that before that, but the 80s is where it kind of found its footing with Eddie Murphy, where it became this. Now I'm going to cuss on stage. And
he, right.
you know, and then people went, how can we up this?
Well, right.
And so right. they took it farther. I mean, look, I thought Eddie Murphy as a stand-up was very funny. But Steve Martin is my all-time favorite, like, hero in stand-up, next to Tom Wilson, of course.
Yeah. I sell more tickets
That's right.
than more.
He was so brilliant. And he would, every once in a while, he would cuss or tell, you know, a blue joke.
He added, as Johnny Carson put it, and maybe I've said it on the podcast before, yeah. but Johnny Carson said, you know, that good comedy needs a hint of mint.
Yes.
Which is what he would call it. Which is that the specter of either being real or naughty or using a bad word for a very specific effect, but it was using it as a spice, not as an entree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's great.
But Steve Martin, of course. I've talked about Steve Martin on the podcast before. Steve Martin used me in the audience.
That's
when
right.
I saw him when I was in college. I was in the third row, and he picked me out. He made fun of me. I was, you know, my ears were burning. I was completely
humiliated.
You
did the two wild and crazy guys together.
Yeah, right? But I thought that day I thought my life could end because that was like yeah. the pinnacle. I have hit the pinnacle. Steve Martin made me stand up, made fun of me. Yeah. Everyone laughed at me, yeah. and then at the end he said, "Hey Tom, that's just having a little fun at your expense," and and it was like,
and the best thing. See, here's the thing. Steve Martin is inspiring to me for several reasons, because he was the biggest, you know, what, like how many arenas, I don't know how many.
He was maybe, like I don't know of another comedian in history
yeah.
that became an arena comedian,
yeah.
that became kind of a stadium comedian.
And then he says, if you ever want a great audiobook outside of Tom Wilson's The Masked Man, you get
Born
Standing Up. Which I got and listened to. It's great because if you like reading books, it's great. But I got it because I wanted to hear him because it's him reading it. And I loved that.
With I listened to him read that book a lot.
Yeah.
I've listened to him read the entire book many, many times.
Have you? Yeah.
On airplanes late at night and everything. I find it very, very comforting. I'm a huge Steve Martin fan.
Yeah, me too.
And the fact is that so much except for the huge success toward the end of the book, it's like my story.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm listening to what I did too.
Yeah. His life and all that he did, and the magic and the working his way. It's what I was going to say, what I love about him is he went, once the crowd started to dwindle, he went, okay. And he had done what he wanted to do. And then he went and made movies, and then he wrote books, and then now he's playing the banjo with these like bluegrass.
The Steep Mountain Rangers, yep.
And people go, and like, you know, and he lives here in Santa Barbara as well, and he'll play at the Granada Theater like once a year. And people go, I think, thinking, oh, it's Steve Martin. He's going to tell some jokes and stuff. I'm sure he's very entertaining and funny, mm-hmm. but he's there to play music. And
right.
he just goes, yeah. However, I will say, so what I was getting at is it's great that he managed to just do that and change, but it's also because he made millions and millions of dollars.
Yes, for those of us who, know the wonderful freedom to do magnificently well. You know, I guess when you're a sort of a lottery winner, you could say, well, now I will pursue those things that interest me.
Yeah.
And if it's sort of more arcane comedy performance, like The Great Flydini, which he did hysterically.
I don't know if that's on YouTube or not. I think I have a copy of it on a VHS tape once because it was when Johnny Carson had him on one of the last shows.
Mm-hmm. And he did a magician called The Great Flydini, which
is brilliant.
Yep. Yep.
it's so good. It's so complex. And
So he did that, but he was able to do many, many things, which I think all people should be afforded, but very few really can, let's face it.
But here's what I will say about one of our heroes, Steve Martin. I wonder if he's not the most happy guy, though. It seems like he's kind of sad, you know? Like he's just... It's like I wish he had a little more... I'm sorry, that sounds like I'm judging. But like when you read it and stuff, you go, oh, man, it seems like... Am I off the mark there?
I don't think you're off the mark, but I don't think that anyone... I think he's a very private person who have a hard time completely understanding.
Yeah.
But I think that's, honestly, James, I think that's true of you and me and so many people, the people on the outside.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I'm sure of what I project out there.
Yeah.
Because of being such an incredibly shy person, like maybe you when you were young.
Yeah.
Like maybe Steve Martin when he was young.
Yeah.
You know, so many performers, I think that it's just another defense mechanism. For me, you know, I was sick from school. I was absent all the time. I was in the hospital. I was doing all this stuff. And I was a shy person, I think, by nature, very quiet. But it became an untenable character to be.
Yeah.
Like a person who is just silent and who is being bothered by people and pushed around by bully guys, which I was.
Yeah.
And so I became the broad actor guy who gets in front of people with a microphone because being just a person without a microphone is far too uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah,
so you control the situation. You're at a party. You must control the party.
Yeah.
So you will take over the party because that will prevent you from having an actual conversation and someone asking you something that makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah. No, I think that's spot on. I think it's spot on. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's true of him too. And I think it was true of Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny Carson, who I got to meet, who I was on the show, you know, a few times, and just a very nice man.
Yeah.
From Nebraska. You know, I mean, you take him at face value, kind person. Yeah. Very nice to me, and everyone would want to plumb the depths.
Yeah.
What makes him tick?
Yeah.
And he would not allow people to see what makes him tick. He would not allow people to know that. So then he becomes a mystery. Yeah. And I think, and I'm not saying that with this broad brush, everyone's exactly the same.
Right.
But I'm saying that, yes, because we're fans, we would certainly like to meet Steve Martin or talk to him or like that. You know, if I met Steve Martin, as I think I've said on the podcast before, I would be like Chris Farley in that sketch interviewing interviewing Paul McCartney.
Remember
that song yesterday? Yeah. That was a good song, man. That was awesome. You know,
stupid. Yeah.
Right. And I know from Back to the Future, and I've talked to other actors, Mark Hamill, that really we're and again, you know that I don't put myself anywhere near Mark Hamill in that magnitude of pop cultural icon. But
well,
since you're only
both
a human
of you
being,
you both have the same dilemma of people going, ah, it's you.
Right. But when you're just a human being, and people come up to you, as they do to Mark, or certainly to Steve Martin, as I might have done to Steve Martin if I met him when I was 19 after that show.
Right.
Or people come up to me and say, you know, I was going through a hard time and I was 14 years old.
Yeah.
And my dad took us to a drive-in and we saw Back to the Future. And it really, you know, it filled me with such joy. And I say, thank you so much. It's kind of you to tell me that.
Yeah.
But for some reason, somehow I can't tell them enough feel that I've connected with them on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great.
That conversation, I think, never ends in a way where they walk away saying, you know, I connected with Tom in the way that I wanted to.
Right.
Because that was their life. That was their moment.
Yeah.
And if I tell Steve Martin, you know, Steve, I saw you when I was in college.
Yeah.
And you know that, and all the comedians were political, and David Steinberg and Robert Klein, and they were funny.
Yeah.
But then you came with an arrow through your head, playing a banjo with rabbit ears, doing this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And I was going through a very hard time in life. And just that joy, that just craziness, the happy, it affected me so deeply. And I wanted to share that with you. What could he say? But
Thank you.
Thank you for telling me that.
That's so true. That's so true. Yeah. And powerful, because it is that. It is exactly that. And I think of that often. And I think of that if I do like the signings and things, because with Star Wars, it created that. Star Wars is that. You know, Mark gets that. I get it on a smaller degree because of the show and stuff and hosting the events. And you go to a signing and these people are waiting patiently, eagerly to meet you. And I think, well, gosh, Steve Martin is the perfect example because he really is one of my all-time heroes.
Absolutely.
And exactly what you just said. When I was going through, I had his albums memorized so much so that I could do The Cruel Shoes for you right now, word for word.
Right.
Or any of his albums. And I would do them in like fifth, sixth grade for class. Mm-hmm. I'd take out the dirty parts.
Sure. So,
which is one of his lines. And it was so powerful and it helped me go through all those things, and it made me who I am. How can you say enough to somebody?
How can you say enough to somebody? That's the thing.
And what can they say,
right,
other than thank you?
And that is an interesting position that an artist has.
Yeah.
To create something and have it mean something to people.
Yeah.
So much that it means almost more than it meant to the person creating the thing.
Yeah.
It meant a lot to the person creating the thing. It meant a lot to them. It meant a lot to Steve Martin to come out with the banjo and arrow. And Back to the Future meant a lot to me. And your work has meant a lot to you. And Mark's work has meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
But it didn't, you know, it didn't hit him in the seventh grade and transform the way he thinks about life.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that is so true. That is wild.
So he can only say thank you. That, you know, and...
Which is why, to bring it all the way back around, why things like the podcasts are kind of cool. Because it gives you insight into somebody else without... Because most people aren't going to get to sit down with Tom Wilson and say, thank you, this is what this meant, or Steve Martin, or me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the bottom of the... Yeah, I don't...
I'm pretty easy to get to.
Yeah, I know. I don't put myself on their
thing at all. Having that ability to sit down, that's what's great about these, is that then you get to sit down, you hear us just kind of chatting as we would. You know, it's like one of the ones I love. Have you seen that Jerry Seinfeld, the new web show he has?
The Talking in Cars?
Yeah, Comedians in Cars.
Coffee?
I love it. It's just these two guys hanging out and talking.
Right, right.
I think that's what people want now, and maybe that is a way to kind of help give that. But there's a danger in it too, which is where we're becoming so used to each other and used to the private lives that you need to have that, what you were talking about with Steve Martin, of that, a bit of that wall up at times where you go, okay, this is the part I give you, and this is the part I take when I get home. And people are, it seems sometimes, are having trouble with that line, the blurred line there, the fans.
I think that's very true.
Yeah.
I think it's very true. And I mean, you know, I'm okay with doing a podcast, and I'm okay with this, but yeah. I just wonder what the next iteration that a person, that a website or something, and they say, oh, this is the new reality of the life of an artist, where
there will
you
be
have to
work,
exactly
24 hours in your home,
and you wear Google Glass, and you just, and people can go on this website and just be you. So,
and for a fee, they can make you say things.
Right. There were those, I mean, this is now a brainstorm that I'm having, because there have always been these games where you play a character.
Right.
You know, will there be a game where you get to be Tom Cruise?
Yeah. Wow.
Or whoever the star is.
Or here it is. And see, we're putting it out here, and now somebody's going to steal it. Viacom, as you know. Will.
Yes.
Where it's almost like there's a digital copy of Tom Cruise or Tom Wilson or James Arnold Taylor in space, internet space, that now a director, a young up-and-coming director, needs to have a name in their film, and they take this digital copy of them and drop them in for a fee, and you go, and it's all simulated.
I think that that's going to happen, actually. Yeah. I think that that's literally going to happen.
I do too.
I think the technology is becoming very close, very close, where these estates who are making a lot of money, Priscilla Presley and the Presley family sold the rights to Elvis Presley to a giant company.
Wow.
For a lot of money.
Yeah.
So they own the rights to him. Now, they could, I guess, retain some rights or whatever, but what is keeping them from, with the present technology, to say, you could have Elvis Presley in your movie?
In your movie, As a regular character.
Yes.
We'll have someone wear a suit, and those moves will then be put onto the computer image of Elvis, and then we'll get a voice actor to
come
into the voice.
If you don't have that much money, Lauren Green. We've captured a lot of his performances from Bonanza.
I mean,
and you can have Lauren Green on our, you know, on the lower list. That's our B list.
Yeah.
Or you can have Elvis. But, you know, I mean,
like
you make a musical movie that is an action adventure starring Elvis Presley and Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah. And they sing.
And you make it. And right now, since Robert Zemeckis always listens to my podcast,
that's right,
he's in his car saying, "Eureka!"
That's it. Then our work is done, isn't it?
Where can people find you? What are you up to now, and what's happening?
Okay, well, I'm doing
Twitter is
Rob Paulson's podcast.
Oh God! Right in my face.
No, I have Twitter. I am Jat Actor.
James Arnold said Jat.
J-A-T actor. J-A-T actor.
That's your Twitter?
That's my Twitter and my Instagram. Now, do you do Instagram?
No.
You should. Instagram's great. You take pictures, you put them on.
I don't have a phone that takes it. Yeah, I don't.
You know. Anyway. which is.
Nothing that I do is of interest to anyone, really.
I
eat so fast that there's just empty plates.
Well, empty plates. You could do a whole series.
If a club sandwich is placed before me, I'm not taking a moment to photograph it.
But here's what's cool. Here's what I've done with my Instagram. In fact, I should do it before you leave. I've been taking pictures of actors, voice acting, because everything when you do voice acting is NDAs, and you can never disclose what you're working on. And I'm working on a very top secret thing. So I started taking pictures of actors' feet standing at the mic stands in the studios.
Oh, excellent.
And so on Instagram, I post photos of them. Guess who I'm working with today and where, and it's fun. So there's that. And then you've got Facebook. I'm on Facebook. I have a fan page on Facebook.
James Arnold Taylor.
James Arnold Taylor. Search for James Arnold Taylor, the official fan page. And then jamesarnoldtaylor.com will take you to any of those. So you could go to jamesarnoldtaylor.com and you could find out that. I have my stage show, which I will be doing.
And what's the title of your stage show?
The stage show is
because it's on YouTube in order to see some of it.
You can see, actually, I just released this last week the entire one-hour version that I did at Celebration 6 for 3,000 people.
Wow.
Orlando Convention Center. An audience of 3,000 people, which is huge, really neat. And I did the full one-hour show, and it's on YouTube now if you go to my YouTube
page. I couldn't recommend it more highly, friends of mine. I really couldn't. It's really – it's a spectacular performance. It's an incisive communication of what a voice actor does.
Yeah.
And it's a Herculean feat of stagecraft.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm not even exaggerating.
Thank you. It's fun. And it's really fun. I'm going to do it for the Screen Actors Guild Foundation, the SAG Foundation, in the fall. So I'll be posting about that.
Oh, that's neat. Okay. Anyway, thanks, buddy. James is simply one of my favorite guys in life, let alone show business. And I'm glad that I had an opportunity to talk with him again. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Tell a friend or consider subscribing to the podcast if you can. Thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody at Nerdist Industries. Thanks to McPherson Guitars. Thanks to the fine people of Jackson, Mississippi, and all my friends at the Spinal Muscular Atrophy Association. And thank you especially for listening. And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.